Morning. I should like to introduce you to one of Paul's circle of friends and highly valued co-workers, to a lovely man, by name Epaphroditus. And I say lovely man deliberately, not so much because that is what his name means, which it does, but because that is what he was. We know Epaphroditus only from what Paul tells us of him in his letter to Epaphroditus' home assembly, from the apostle's letter to the saints at Philippi. So let's read what Paul has to say of him. First, from chapter 2, commencing at verse 25. I have thought it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother and fellow worker and fellow soldier, and your messenger and minister to my need. For he has been longing for you all, and has been distressed because you heard that he was ill. Indeed, he was ill, coming near to death. But God had mercy on him, and not only on him, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. I'm sending him more eagerly, probably more speedily, therefore, that seeing him again you may rejoice, and that I may be less sorrowful. Receive him therefore in the Lord with all joy, and hold such in honor, because for the work of Christ he drew near even to death, risking his life to complete the ministry you could not give to me. Now a few verses in chapter 4, and we break in at verse 14. You did well that you had fellowship with my affliction. You yourselves know, Philippians, that in the beginning of the gospel, when I left Macedonia, no church had fellowship with me in the matter of giving and receiving, except you only. For even in Thessalonica, once and again you sent to my need. I am filled, having received from Epaphroditus the things you sent. A fragrant odor, a sacrifice acceptable and pleasing to God. Back in verse 4 of chapter 2, Paul had exhorted the believers to consider not only their own interests, but also the interests of others. And through the remainder of the chapter, he sets before us, as he did them, four examples of those whose attitudes and actions provide us with living commentaries on those words. First, and supremely, the example of our Lord, Christ Jesus, then of himself and of Timothy. And finally, of our man for today, Epaphroditus. But although our two passages for this morning focus particularly on Epaphroditus, they paint for us the most beautiful picture of selfless care and consideration, displayed not only by him, but also by the church at Philippi, and by the Apostle Paul himself. First, we note the thoughtfulness shown by the church for Paul, in that, not for the first time, they had felt moved to forward financial support to him when he was in need of it. Oh, and their heartfelt concern for Epaphroditus when they heard of his serious illness. And second, we note the deep care shown by the apostle for Epaphroditus. In the way that he, Paul, speaks of God in healing Epaphroditus, having had mercy not only on him, Epaphroditus, but on himself, Paul, also. Lest, as he said, I should have sorrow upon sorrow, that such was this man's attachment to Epaphroditus, that for God to spare his, Epaphroditus's life, was at the same time for God to spare him, the apostle, yet more sorrow. We can hardly miss the consideration which Paul shows for the Philippian church in speedily sending Epaphroditus back to them, that they might rejoice at seeing him back safe and sound. And please know, Paul sent Epaphroditus to them, even though Epaphroditus would doubtless have proved an ongoing source of help and encouragement to Paul, much as just a little time before, and for entirely different reasons, Paul had sent Onesimus back to Philemon, even though that newly converted runaway was now profitable to him. And then third, we note the tender concern shown by Epaphroditus, concern shown for his home assembly, in his great longing for them, and in the deep distress he experienced on learning that they had been informed of his illness. Distress that they had discovered he was sick. It's a far cry indeed from the sense of satisfaction which some get from being the center of attention, and who would be very distressed indeed if others have not heard of their illness in detail. And what can we say about the selfless care which Epaphroditus showed for Paul in putting his own life at risk to minister to him by carrying a monetary gift from his home church to help Paul in his need, as the apostle himself expressed it twice. Even though this involved him, Epaphroditus, in a journey upwards of 830 miles, largely by road, but partly by sea across the Adriatic Straits, which journey would have taken the man in excess of a month of non-stop travel, apart from which there was a very serious risk to his own life in associating himself with a man who was awaiting trial before no less than the then Emperor Nero. Yes, indeed, what a beautiful picture our passages in Philippians 2 and 4 paint for us of Christian thoughtfulness, consideration, as all of those involved looked not only on their own things, but also on the things of others. But we are interested this morning, in particular, with Epaphroditus. And I want us to think of him briefly under three simple headings. First, his relationship to both Paul and to the Philippian church, which Paul outlines for us in verse 25. My brother and fellow worker and fellow soldier, Paul says, if you like, one in faith, one in work, and one in conflict. For one faith bound them as brothers in the same great family. One work occupied them as they labored in the same great cause, and one conflict faced them as side by side they contended for the same great gospel. And Paul describes Epaphroditus not only as sharing the same spiritual life as him, but as his fellow worker, which is Paul's usual way of speaking of those who labored with him. Indeed, I note that of the 13 times it's used in the New Testament, all but one come from the pen of Paul. But they not only worked together, they warred together. They stood together, so to speak, with trowel in one hand and sword in the other. And in that Epaphroditus chose to join the apostle in the firing line, he fully merited the title fellow soldier, or comrade in arms, which is what the word Paul used signifies. And scholars assure us that only those who had been through experiences of battle together greeted one another in this way. But if this man is my brother and fellow worker and fellow soldier, he is, Paul reminds the Philippians, your messenger and minister to my need. By messenger, Paul views Epaphroditus as their envoy, their representative, someone who had been delegated by the church to carry out a task for them. And clearly, if the assembly at Philippi had selected Epaphroditus, as they had, to bring their gift to Paul, they must have had great confidence in this man and trusted him implicitly. He was carrying money, and a lot of it. When the apostle writes of Epaphroditus as their minister to my need, the word he uses, which we translate minister, differs from the word we normally render that way, and which is used to describe others of his companions. For example, Archippus, Epaphras, Tychicus. No, not that word. The word which Paul uses of Epaphroditus here, very closely related to the word rendered priest throughout the Greek Old Testament. And with my eye on what we read from chapter 4, verse 18, namely that Paul described the monetary gift which Epaphroditus brought from the Philippian assembly as a fragrant odor, a sacrifice acceptable and well-pleasing to God, with my eye on that, I can only conclude that the apostle looked on the service of Epaphroditus as a priestly service. Aye, what dignity this bestows upon our giving and the use of blue bags. I mentioned earlier that the generous gift the Philippians had forwarded through Epaphroditus was not the first they'd sent him. We know, for example, that following Paul's first and eventful visit to their city, they had more than once sent him timely assistance when he labored for the Lord at Thessalonica, which was another city in the province of Macedonia, and when he passed on from Macedonia into the province of Achaia, they sent further support to him while he worked at Corinth. And I note that when writing to the Corinthians, Paul praised the self-sacrificing generosity of the churches of Macedonia, including, needless to say, Philippi, in contributing toward the relief of the poor saints of Jerusalem and Judea. They were good with money. But I note with sadness that a little over 50 years later, the fame of that same church had been sullied by the sin of avarice. For Polycarp, Christian leader from Smyrna, then had occasion to repeatedly denounce avarice in his letter to them and to express great grief over the scandal brought on the gospel by the greed of one couple in the church, that of a former elder, a certain Valens, and his wife, who one respected commentator well described as the Ananias and Sapphira of the Philippian community. But here in his letter, the apostle cannot speak highly enough of the sacrifice acceptable and pleasing to God which Epaphroditus had brought him, and of the wholehearted way in which Epaphroditus had performed his sacred priestly duty. Second, we note the circumstances surrounding Epaphroditus's return to Philippi. In the section immediately before that in which he speaks of Epaphroditus in chapter 2, Paul expressed his hope that he would be able to dispatch Timothy to them soon, so that Timothy could both inform them how things went with him, Paul, at his trial, and also bring back word to him of how things were going with them, of the Philippians. Indeed, Paul trusted that a favorable outcome before Nero would mean that he would soon be able to come to them himself. But now in our section, Paul turns from his future plans to one of his present purpose in writing, namely, to make it clear to the Philippians that in his eyes, it was necessary for him to send Epaphroditus speedily, as quickly as possible, which is how the word in verse 28 should probably be translated. And the apostle explains what led him to this conclusion. At some point, and for some reason, Epaphroditus had been taken seriously ill. Now, we don't know whether this was on the way to Rome or while he was there. We don't know whether Epaphroditus had simply succumbed to some dangerous disease. Perhaps the notorious Roman fever which sometimes swept through the city, or whether it was the effect of his long journey, or possibly overexertion in the service for God at Rome. We don't know. What we do know is that in his mercy, God did for Epaphroditus what he'd done for King Hezekiah some 7.5 centuries before. He granted him an extension to his life. Now, we know that Dr. Luke had spent some 5 or 6 years at Philippi after the assembly first began there. And so he may well have come to know Epaphroditus and well. And we know that Luke was with Paul when he first arrived at Rome. But we have no way of knowing if Luke was with Paul during Epaphroditus' illness. And even if Luke was there, and even if, as we would expect of him, Luke did all he could to help, it is not to any physician or medication that Paul attributes his fellow worker's recovery. In Paul's book, it was God and his mercy which brought Epaphroditus through. But Paul was well aware that the healed Epaphroditus eagerly longed to see his brethren back home, and that indeed he was greatly distressed. Distressed, not that he'd been sick, but that news of his earlier illness might still be causing great sorrow among his fellow believers there. Distressed, did I say? I note that the word translated distressed is found elsewhere in the New Testament only, where Matthew and Mark use it to describe our Lord's deep anguish and distress when he prayed in the Garden of Gethsemane. Oh, yeah. Epaphroditus was distressed, all right. Scholars point to a somewhat similar case of unselfish concern brought to light by a second century letter. The mother of a soldier had heard that her son was ill, and he wrote to her to tell her that she should not have been troubled by the report she'd heard. It was true, he admitted, that he had not written to her for some time, but this was not on account of his sickness, he said, but on account of the pressure of his military duties. So, he wrote, "Do not be distressed about me. I was deeply grieved to hear that you had heard about me, for I was not seriously ill." But as you can see, the case with Epaphroditus was very different. For the report that had reached the Philippians was certainly no exaggeration. On the contrary, as Paul assures them, indeed, he was ill, coming near to death. He, that is, as we would say, lay at death's door, humanly speaking, his life, been hanging by a thread. But that was all history now, for God had mercy on him. And Paul was aware that the only sure way to put the minds of the Philippian saints at rest was for them to see Epaphroditus face to face and to satisfy themselves that he was indeed recovered from his sickness. Paul could only imagine, of course, what joy that reunion would mean for them. But such was his affection for these people that their relief and rejoicing would have the effect, he said, of lessening his ongoing sorrow. Now, according to verse 27, the threat of the additional sorrow which Paul would have experienced if Epaphroditus had died, that had been lifted by God's mercy to Epaphroditus. For if he had died, he, Paul, would, as Paul's language suggests, have had sorrow coming upon sorrow as wave after wave But even after Epaphroditus' recovery, Paul was not free from sorrow. He still faced sorrow on account, probably, of his continuing imprisonment. But the apostle's anticipation of the Philippians' joy in seeing Epaphroditus home again in good health would, he said, make his remaining burden lighter as well. And easing the mind of his beloved Philippians and giving them cause for great joy meant far more to Paul than any further service which Epaphroditus might have rendered him. No doubt about it, the apostle had drunk deeply at the well of verse 4, considering not so much his own interests as he did the interests of others. I've no doubt from the way Paul expresses himself that Epaphroditus had the joy and the privilege of bearing this precious thank you letter back to his home assembly. And just think then how much we all undergone to the sickness of Epaphroditus, whatever it was, whatever occasioned it. And where would we be, for instance, without verses 5 to 11 of this very chapter? Be hard not to see God's hand at work behind the scenes. And then Paul adds what we could safely call a brief word of commendation. Indeed, the first half of verse 29 reads almost identically to the first half of verse 2 of Romans 16, where Paul writes, as he said in verse 1, to commend Phoebe from Cenchrea to the saints at Rome. We do remember, don't we, that Phoebe also carried a most important item of the apostle's correspondence. Where would we be without his epistle to the Romans? But in this case, Paul has an important addition to make. Having said, receive him therefore in the Lord with all joy, he adds, and hold such in honor. Give my fellow soldier a hero's welcome home, and never cease, the tense, to hold such in honor, because this good soldier of Jesus Christ hath distinguished himself in battle, not counting his life dear to himself. And the mention of honor due to Epaphroditus brings us to our last heading, Epaphroditus' contribution to the work of Christ. It would be true to say that this lovely man had lost his health and almost his life in serving both his church and the apostle. But ultimately, as Paul makes clear, Epaphroditus drawing so near to death was the result of his engaging in the work of Christ. He'd undertaken that journey to Rome to bring the Philippians' gift to Paul. And since Paul's imprisonment was directly related to the work of Christ, anyone who brought a gift to support him was thereby contributing to the same work, the work of Christ. I said at the beginning that Epaphroditus' name means lovely, and it does. But for all that, it was derived from the name of a Greek goddess. And I was interested to learn that Aphrodite was the goddess not only of sensual love and fertility, but of gambling. Scholars tell us that when a pagan Greek threw the dice, he would cry out, Epaphroditos, which means favorite of Aphrodite, hoping to be favored by her with gambler's luck. Why was Malcolm interested in this? For the simple reason that when Paul told the Philippians that Epaphroditus drew near even to death risking his life, the word he used translated risking was often used outside the Bible as a gambler's... that scrambled the Greek, didn't it? As a gambler's word, and was used when somebody staked all on the throw of the dice. I get that Paul might have permitted himself a smile when he commended back to the Philippian church one of their own number who bore a name which to many pagans suggested the goddess of gambling, and who chose to gamble, so to speak, with his own life, to venture his life for his, that's Paul's sake, for their sake, to complete the ministry you could not give. No criticism implied there. And ultimately, of course, for Christ's sake. Who chose to gamble with his life? And who won? And who indeed won for himself honourable mention in a letter which has blessed the church for almost 2,000 years. Unquestionably, Epaphroditus was marked by great loveliness of character. And like many, he truly lived up to his name. He was a lovely man.